Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams. Daniel, good to see you.
Good morning, Dr. Paul.
Good. There's lots of things we could talk about today, economically and in foreign policy, because even today, it looks like this magic number of 20,000 might be challenged, like it was knocked down a bit, and who knows what it'll be like at the end of the day. But I think the markets are vulnerable, and markets are reflecting things going on in foreign policy as well. And we want to spend some time on foreign policy today, because the big news over the weekend, if you forced yourself to watch the television and all, you found out that people aren't too happy with this ban that the president has instituted by executive order, keeping certain people out of the country, making the argument that we do have problems, and there are some problems, but the big question is there's a lot of resistance, a lot of chaos. And I think some of that going on right now is going to be reflected in the markets. But today, you know, what we're talking about and what we're seeing is tremendous resistance to this ban, because some people are arguing that this is a religious ban, the Muslims are being banned and this sort of thing. And then also, no, it's just the jihadists that are going to be banned. But then sometimes when we look at it, some jihadists are banned, but some other ones aren't. And some anti-jihadists are being banned. So it's really messy. But I guess it was about Friday when he issued this executive order. And why don't you tell the audience what that executive order actually said?
Okay, sure. In a nutshell, essentially, it did three things. First of all, it temporarily halts refugee admission for 120 days. He said, we sort out who's coming in and what's happening. It caps refugee admission at 50,000 per year, which, if you didn't know the president, that would sound either bad or good or what have you. But essentially, the U.S., with some exceptions over the past few years, has typically allowed in less than 50,000. So that's not necessarily a cut. The third is probably the most controversial, which is a 90-day ban on people being issued visas to come to the U.S. or being allowed to enter the U.S., who come from either Iran, Iraq, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen. Those seven countries, people from those countries cannot come, even dual citizens. And there's a question over whether green card holders are included in the ban or not. There's some chaos. So that's in it in a nutshell.
Well, and that chaos in interpretation of there was translated into chaos at the airports. And, you know, although they said, well, only this small number were really retained, it looks like a bunch of them were retained for a long time. And, of course, that drew the crowds of demonstrators, because it's easy to demonstrate against something like this. But what I find interesting is they list these seven countries, and I imagine in those countries you can find somebody there that poses a threat to somebody. But does it require, what is being done? But I think the most interesting thing is what wasn't done. You know, Saudi Arabia has been associated with some violence and terrorism and 9/11, and the Congress unanimously voted that the American the people's families who suffered after 9/11 can sue the government of Saudi Arabia. And they are notorious for their civil liberties there, but they were excluded. They're okay. And, of course, 15 out of the 19 for 9/11 came from Saudi Arabia. So this makes you wonder what's really going on. Is terrorism the main issue? In Pakistan, they're no angels either. So if we were attacking terrorism in this manner, which is not our first suggestion, we have to look at foreign policy and the other things. But so it doesn't really add up. And yet Trump comes back and he always has an explanation for this, but I don't even know whether the media, which would like to bug Trump, whether they point out these inconsistencies of, well, why don't you go after Saudi Arabia? I hear it, you know, on the independent sources on the internet, but I'm not so sure the mainstream media will really, challenge Trump, with this discrepancy.
Well, what's even more perplexing is that his executive order explicitly cites 9/11 and the 19 hijackers as one of the justifications for this ban. Yet somehow, mysteriously, the country where they all came from is excluded. And then you look at the seven countries that are included, and you might play a little child's game. What do all these countries have in common? The answer is that they've all been either bombed and or destabilized by the United States over the past 20 years or so. That's what they have in common.
And what about, the two countries, Syria and Iran? They're both in the list. And yet the Syrian government, the last thing they want are terrorists in their countries instead of subsidizing them and getting our weapons and all these things. I mean, Assad would like to fight them. What about the Iranians? You know, we've made it very complex over there. What did we do, with Saddam Hussein? A bad guy, but he hated these people. He didn't want these terrorists and the radicals in his country, and he maintained some sense of stability in that country. But they're not on the list at all. They're tolerated and even made friends at times. So, but they're willing to fight terrorism, and yet they're not on this list.
Yeah, it's really the huge disconnect between recent history and current reality. You're right. Saddam Hussein was a vicious ruler, but he was vicious, for the most part, against terrorists. The jihadists that are in Syria right now, a lot of them were imported by the U.S., by Saudi Arabia, by Qatar. They've been imported in there. Assad is fighting these terrorists. Iran doesn't have a terrorism problem. Iran has not attacked the United States, doesn't sponsor, despite what they say, doesn't sponsor terrorism against the U.S.
And of course, those the people involved on 9/11, they all came here legally. They were vetted, so to speak. Now, Trump might say, well, they didn't get vetted seriously enough. Well, maybe you can change a little bit, but does that mean you build walls and exclude thousands of people and you don't even know what the green card people are going to do, and you wonder why there's chaos, and you wonder why it makes the markets a little shaky? But I think there's a lot of fear-mongering going on. War hysteria. You always have to have this enemy about to come and get us. And the American people sort of get impressed with all this noise. Oh, we have to have a strong approach to these terrorists. And, in the last 15 years, there are actually 94 Americans, killed by terrorists. That's a terrible amount. But compared to a weekend or two in our major cities, it's nothing. But they don't get those, so many who are wringing their hands over it. They don't seem to equate, death is death and problems what we have here. Maybe we should put it in the proper perspective. But this whole idea of the last 15 years, that we really haven't had this, tremendous problem of massive immigrants coming in and causing these terrorist attacks. And when we've had a few, they were mostly people who were born here. They wouldn't be affected by fences. They wouldn't have been affected, by this type of ban. They might argue, well, maybe the ban would catch them. But they wouldn't be. If they're American citizens and born here, they wouldn't be affected by any of this. But the one thing they won't talk about is the foreign policy that might incite them. And I think you might have mentioned those seven countries that he put a ban on were all seven countries that have been on the receiving end of bombs. And it wasn't Trump that dropped most of those bombs, although it looks like he's continuing it. How many? 26,000 bombs last year
alone,
by Obama. And he was the peace candidate. So, and since the number one enemy in foreign affairs for the new administration are the terrorists. So the bombing is not going to cease, and I think he's already American military officer was just killed over the weekend in Yemen.
In Yemen, they are killed in Yemen fighting Al Qaeda. Yet we're also backing Syria, who's fighting the government, who's fighting Al Qaeda. So we're fighting Al Qaeda, but we're fighting the people who are fighting Al Qaeda, just like in Syria. But as you pointed out, the people who have done these attacks, they've told us why they've done it. It doesn't justify, but they've said, we're angry over U.S. bombing in the Middle East and West Asia. That's why we do it. So why don't we just stop doing that? That might help.
Well, Bin Laden was very precise. He said it was the bombing of Iraq continuously for 10 years. He also said that a Muslim believer resented the fact that we had a military base in Saudi Arabia, which is considered holy land. And also, they make mention that they think the Palestinians get a bum rap. Yeah. And they listed that as a reason. But you know what I think is strange is, you know, if you're in the local police force in the old days when it was local and you didn't have the UN and the FBI and the CIA coming in, they would say, well, this guy was murdered and we have to look around and find somebody with a motive. Yeah. What is the motive? Why was he killed? And the motive always would, they never ask this question. What is the motive? Even though they blow it way out of proportion, but it's just an excuse to go about our business overseas and claiming that we have to do this. But they never ask for the motive. But maybe there is such a thing as blowback. Maybe there is a reason for them to retaliate. And the fact that all these seven countries have been bombed and it continues. And it's almost, you know, disturbing that, you know, if you suggest what I have, and I've been on the receiving end of the criticism, oh, you're not a strong American. You're not a patriotic. You don't care about our troops. But there's a different side of that story.
This is almost an implicit admission that blowback is real. But because these are the countries we're involved. You know, we use as our subtitle the question of whether this really has a lot more to do with Iran than anything else. And I wanted to share a couple of points. And this is made by one of our good friends and a really good supporter of the Institute. And he wrote me. He's very concerned about this. He's here in Texas, and where we have a lot of international workers, engineers coming from places like Iran and et cetera. But he just gave three examples. He wrote a letter to his representatives saying this is a problem. His co-worker is getting married within 90 days. The bride is from Iran. The family's not going to be able to come out for the wedding now because of this. He's got another friend on a cruise. She's not going to be able to come back and finish her studies. Another one is a businessman, an Iranian businessman who's out of town on business, not going to be able to come back in. And so he's very concerned. These people have already gone through the vetting process. They're here illegally. And he asked his representatives, why is Iran, a country that has not attacked us and doesn't threaten us, on the list, whereas we pointed out where Saudi Arabia is not only allowed to operate in here, but is given all sorts of subsidies and things to be involved in the oil and gas exploration business?
You mentioned the fact about Iran. It's a complex thing because if you were looking for some type of a foreign policy that you can understand, and we have, you know, been complimentary of a different policy than Obama dealing with Russia. I mean, why pick a war with Russia? And yet. Right now, of course, there's a difference for Trump when he deals with Iran. Iran and the terrorists is enough to continue this process of intervention and bombing. But what about this H.J. Res that you've written a little bit about on the Institute website, H.J. Res 10, Elsie Hastings, not exactly a libertarian, introduced this resolution, which probably would have outraged me if I were there. I imagine when we had spotted that, I'd been on the House floor pointing this out. And they said, most people say, it is so outrageous that it won't be paid much attention to. But it sort of sets the stage and the attitude. And to tell the audience exactly what this resolution would do, I think it's trying to amend the Constitution by a piece of legislation.
Yeah, exactly. And just a point on the it's no big deal. It's just sitting there on the shelf. Well, that's what they said. Remember, all the time in the 90s when they were passing all of these overthrow bills about Iraq, they said, "Oh, don't worry, Ron. It's just language. It's no big deal." And you kept saying, "It's setting a precedent. It's setting a precedent." So even if this is an obscure piece of legislation without a lot of co-sponsors, it's sitting there waiting. And what it does is essentially, and it really is explicit in the bill, it authorizes the president to use military force against Iran, not if Iran develops nuclear weapons, not if Iran deploys or uses them, but to prevent Iran from using them. So it is a complete blank check for preemptive war.
Well, one thing you could point out, that we can point out, is that this is not an invention
You know, by Elsie Hastings, it's not brand new. It's not part of the Trump administration. It's actually not part of Obama's administration. This is a continuation of the Bush policy, the Bush doctrine, a preemptive war.
Yeah.
I mean, he explicitly said that. We got to take our fight to them, and we got to do this, and which includes invasions and bombings and occupations. And they've justified this, and the American people should be screaming and hollering about this, but they're way too tolerant about this because they don't think the Constitution's all that important. But I would say, for the most part, so many Americans are probably oblivious to this, you know, because it doesn't interest them, and they're worrying about some other things a lot less important.
And, you know, the thing is, this sitting on the shelf is holding a very important place, because all you need is one little thing to happen. It could even be a false flag, maybe even by a third country. You know that Israel would love to see us go at Iran, and so would the Saudis. There could be a false flag, and imagine something happens. They're going to pull this off the shelf and say, we got to pass this bill. It's right here. It's ready to go. Boom, war with Iran.
Well, it doesn't look good. I was hoping that things would be more settled with the new administration, and I still keep my fingers crossed that at least the big confrontation with the Russians has been downplayed a bit, but not with the Iranians and not with the Chinese. Yeah. So it's not a consistent pattern, but consistency is not something that they're much interested in, because I'd like to see a more consistent policy that dealt with the security of the United States. But they always use our terms. We have to be there for national security reasons. That is the reason that we have to be overseas. And we have to send these kids over there to defend our Constitution and defend our freedoms. That, to me, is so ridiculous, because all it is a threat, because this is the atmosphere of war where domestically they get away with Patriot Acts and all these other things, and because there's such great danger and people sacrifice their liberties. So it's a shame. I want national security. I want a strong national defense, but I do not want endless spending on militarism, which is diminishing our national security. That's where I think our problem is.
Exactly. And, you know, I did find something in the executive order that I think you might agree with and you'd like, but only if it applied to Congress. This is a great line. The United States cannot and should not admit those who do not support the Constitution.
Yeah, can you imagine which individuals in Congress are going to teach them about the Constitution when they're coming in? You know, that's the big thing. Everybody's a constitutionalist in Washington. They all take the same oath. But some people believe in a flexible Constitution. It should be adaptable. Other people believe that it's you're supposed to follow it as it has been written. And I keep thinking of things like the Ten Commandments. You know, well, maybe we live in a society today where, oh, they're way too precise. We have to modernize them and change them. So it is something that I think we earnestly try to address here on our program and point out that there is a much better foreign policy. The founders knew it and understood it. But from the very beginning, we drifted from that. But we really have drifted from this, especially since our entrance into the war of the Spanish-American War, and ever since Woodrow Wilson, all through the 20th century, it has been building. It's been an imperialist foreign policy, but we're running out of steam, running out of ideas. It's chaos, and nobody knows exactly what we're doing. I think eventually, I've always said it's going to affect the markets. I think it's already started to do that. And this is something that we can't continue with. An empire's always in for financial reasons. And I think this whole business of being interventionist enough to send our troops into so many countries, 120, 30 countries, 900 bases overseas, banning certain immigrants, at the same time not banning some of the countries that probably could be a lot worse, and fighting the people who are fighting our enemies, it makes no sense whatsoever. Non-intervention can answer all these questions. The principles of the Constitution could answer it. We shouldn't allow a congressman to write a bill and get attention and maybe get it passed that amends the Constitution. Of course, we've been avoiding the Constitution. Think of all the wars we fought since World War II without a declaration, so we ignore it. So it is a mess. But believe it or not, there are a lot of people out there in this country today that are still thinking about what we're talking about. And I am convinced that if he only heard our message, they could hear it and make a choice that be on the side of non-intervention and peaceful cooperation with all nations and trade, instead of waiting till problems get bad and then all of a sudden all we have are protectionism and bombing and all this intervention that goes on. That's not going to solve our problem. I do want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.